Good afternoon. I'm Cheryl Snyder, your host for today. Our next guest has a new novel out that's a flashback to the mid-1980s set in a California beach town. Tim Spangler is a Juno writer and joins us now. Hello, Tim, and welcome to the program.
Thanks, Cheryl. Appreciate it. Nice to be here.
Yeah, great. So the name of your book is Boojum Tree. Did I pronounce that correctly?
That's right.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Well, what is your book about?
Well, I think, Cheryl, to explain it, I'll just read the little blurb from the back of the book that summarizes it. In a California beach town in the mid-1980s, dreamer and melancholic Max Wolf is drifting aimlessly through his 20s. In the desert of his life, Max encounters a stranger with a worldview entirely different from his own. Is he capable of shedding the cloak of escapism, sloth, and despair in which he has wrapped himself? Can he move forward without it? Does he want to?
So where did this book come from in you?
I lived in a town similar to this in California. I grew up in Alaska and moved to a town in Santa Cruz County when I was 8 and lived there through college. And so the book, the location is based on where I lived. The story of Max Wolf is nothing in the book has occurred to me in my life, but a lot of the internal life of Max and his are things I thought about and considered in my life, and I felt a real desire to process that and write that in a book and share that story of a young man who is kind of slogging through life and vacillating between kind of escapism, hopefulness, and despair.
So what do you hope readers will get out of this book?
Yeah, I believe that the things that are deepest within each of us are the most universal. And I think this book, I think it brings out some universal themes of questions of meaning, of community, certainly of love. And what I hope is that people come out of this with hope, with a renewed sense of hope. I think this book, and I've been told by people, and I believe this book could be helpful for people who are struggling, who are maybe experience melancholy or are despondent or lethargic and don't have direction. And I also think it could be for people who are just to help clarify, for them to look at their own lives and see what's important in my life and how do I want to live my life. And to try and, you know, eliminate the dross and try and live in what's meaningful and to individual people. So that, I guess that's pretty grandiose, but I hope it helps people on their journeys, wherever they might be.
Mm-hmm. Do I have it right that you have an MA in pastoral ministry? Is that right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how does your faith express yourself in your writing?
I hope my faith kind of informs my entire life. And in the sense that, the core of my faith is that we're here, you know, we're here to love, and that can be in many different ways, and, you know, to use whatever gifts we have to share with other people. And I hope to do that in my life. And I hope this book is a small piece of that, but I hope to, you know, I think we have the opportunity to do that every day in every interaction we have with people. And I think we all, I believe that's what we're all, you know, called to do, mm-hmm. to make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like those who read your book will find it very redemptive.
I do believe it speaks to the redemptive power of love. I certainly think that's a core, of the book. But it belies any kind of simple, you know, soundbite, you know, panacea. but certainly the underpinnings of the book are based in love and based in reaching out to others.
Okay. So I understand, speaking of love, this book really was a labor of love for many, many years. What was your process for getting this story down on paper?
It's not a process I would recommend to anybody who's listening or anybody in the universe. So the genesis of this book came to me decades ago, you know, actually after I moved to Juneau in 84 after college. That's when the seeds started kind of germinating in me, and I started thinking about a storyline. And so I started the book probably late 80s. Probably finished, I imagine, three versions of it over the period of these years. You know, I'd finish it. I'd reach out to try and find agents or publishers unsuccessfully. Got some good feedback, but no bites. Put it away in a drawer for years on end. Took it out, reread it, rewrote it, and repeated that process like probably three times over the years. And I actually think, you know, I think this version of the book, the final version of the book, is far better than the one that was finished like in the 90s, the first go around. But yeah, it was, and my wife, Kasia, she's been very, very patient with me. And I don't think she ever thought this book would see the light of day, but she hung with me and she was encouraging. But I have a lot of emotions having it done and out there. Most of them good.
And so do you feel like, now that it's done, you feel good about it? It's the book you wanted to write. It's there.
I do, Cheryl. I mean, I it's hard to judge yourself as a writer. I mean, I find that difficult to judge how good I am as a writer. But I do believe in the story completely. I believe it's a story, you know, the story of a journey, a physical journey, but more an internal spiritual journey that I think in different ways we all go through, whether we're cognizant of that or not. So I do believe deeply in a story. I think the writing was, I hope the writing does justice to it. I feel grateful to have got to this point and have it out there. Now it's, you know, out of my hands and out of my control.
I can imagine there's some freedom and relief with that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, out of my control, like 98% of the other things in the world.
Would you read some of your book for us?
Yeah, I sure will. This is a piece from kind of early in the book where the protagonist, Max Wolf, and his best friend, Nathan, have gone to a big party. It was very much of a party culture, but they had taken a bit of kind of gone on hiatus for a while, and they were regathering with a bunch of their old friends. And it was sort of a disappointment to Max. But this is toward the end of the party, late at night. They're both very drunk. And Max has made his way outside of this house, and he's sitting with his back to a willow tree. And Nathan comes out and is looking for him and finds him. And this is the conversation. Max, I know you haven't been feeling good lately. It seems like you're really bummed on yourself, Nathan said with drunken sincerity. I just want to tell you that, well, I admire you, and yeah, even envy you. You're a free spirit. I'd like to be more like that. I just kind of go along with life, you know? You look at things deeper. Thanks, but it's all crap. Not what you said, me. And you're your own man, big cat, but thanks for trying to make me feel better. He took a deep breath and continued, enunciating carefully to not slur his words. I've got some notion, God knows where from, that I'm different, special, and I cultivate it to give my life meaning. But look at me, man. What do I have to be proud of? What do I have to show for a quarter of a century on this rock? Oh, I was a pretty good athlete. I had potential. What a sad ass epitaph. Funny thing is, I didn't even like football, but it made me stand out from the crowd. What a goddamn sham, huh? There has to be more to life than trying to be special. After a pause, he continued, his voice low, his tone matter-of-fact. The thing is, I feel like I'm slipping further and further from reality, whatever the hell that is. I can even see myself sliding sometimes, but it's like I'm watching another person in some sad-ass B-movie. I'm like a powerless spectator of my own life. On one hand, it scares the hell out of me, but on the other hand, I don't really care. I'm frightened, Nathan. I'm 25 in a few months, and I have no idea what life's about. Max paused and leaned his head back against the willow. He sighed and continued. I feel like I'm walking on a ledge high up, and I'm dizzy, you know? The thing is, it's such hard work just to stay on the ledge. And, you know, I'm wondering if it's even worth it. Fact is, I hate myself. I hate my life. I have for a long time now. I'm not even looking for happiness anymore, just a little peace. But I don't know where to look or how. What are you saying? You're scaring me here. Max was silent, looking at the ground. After a moment, he shrugged and looked at his friend and said in a soft voice, I'm just drunk. Don't worry about me. Yeah, I've thought about it, but who hasn't? No, don't answer that. I'm sure you haven't. But I'm too much of a chicken for that. Plus, it'd take doing something tangible, which isn't me, right? Max smiled weakly and then said, almost to himself, and you know, deep down, I'm still a romantic, a dreamer. It's just getting harder these days. His voice trailed off into silence. Nathan looked at Max for some time, trying to think of something he could say. He gave up trying and said what was forefront in his heart. I love you, Max. I love you too. It was all they had left to say. They sat in silence, leaning against an ancient willow tree in the front of a nondescript house in the heart of California's Silicon Valley. It had stopped raining, and if the friends had looked up past the willow's graceful arching branches, they would have seen that the clouds had broken in places and stars were visible.
It's a really vivid description and dialogue between the two of them. And I see what you mean about the universal themes that are in your book, that I imagine there's many people who would hear that or read that passage and find something that resonates with their own life experience.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the title, Bujum Tree.
Well, for quite a few years of writing this book, the title was The Maelstrom. Was the working title. And I love that title, The Maelstrom. I love the word maelstrom, you know. But I was at UAS Library, and I don't even remember why, and I have no idea why I picked up a book, and it described Bujum trees. And Bujum is a word that came from a Lewis Carroll nonsense poem, and it was to mean some kind of mythical creature. But here's the description, a brief description from the book on, and when I learned about Bujum trees, when I learned about them, I realized this is a metaphor for the book. This has to be the title. So here's a brief description from the book later in the book about when Max went to first saw a Bujum tree. Scattered about the valley among the cactuses were bizarre trees, the likes of which Max had never seen. The trees ranged from about 3 to 8 feet high and were shaped like slender upside down carrots. The bases of the trees were about a foot wide. And as the trees rose, they tapered to a narrow point at the top. Although some were bare or sparsely limbed, many were adorned with slim spiny branches, which were strewn randomly over their tapering bodies. A number of the trees had smooth bark that was gray, green, or black, but the stems of the others were extremely gnarled. No two of these Dr. Seuss-like trees were the same. Many, however, had branches on the upward end of their trunks that sagged downward as though burdened with some great invisible weight. Yet despite this, at the very ends of these droopy branches, grew inexplicably upward, and some were adorned with patches of pink or white flowers. So when I read about Bujum Trees, it just hit me. I said, no, this is, you know, this is the book's title. And they only grow in a very few areas of the world, in the Baja, California, and somewhere else on mainland Mexico. And they're the only places in the world where they grow naturally. So that's how I got my title.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time. I don't want to close out our conversation without letting listeners know where they can get a copy of your book.
At Hearthside Books is carrying them, and also on Amazon. And I just wanted to say one thing really quick, if I could.
Yeah,
you know, it was kind of a family affair. I talked about my wife's encouragement. My sister, Larry, has been incredibly encouraging. My son, Noah, who's a graphic designer and artist, did the art on the cover and the whole book cover, and it's wonderful. And my daughter, Natalia, was my main editor and had read it a number of times helped me immensely on it. And so I want to thank all of them, as well as Bob Wolf and Kim Andrews, who helped with editing tremendously.
All right. Well, Tim Spangler, thank you so much for joining us today on the program and reading parts of your new book, The Bujum Tree. I look forward to getting my hands on a copy.
Thanks, Cheryl. Thanks very much. Take good care. Bye-bye. Take care.